In Canada, Bend It Like Azzy by Heather Jane Robertson. The photo could hardly be more endearing. 5 11-year-old girls are sharing lunch and silly laughter, scrunched together so that everyone fits in the picture. The reassuring signifiers of girlish innocence are all there: pigtails, braces, freckles. Oh, and the girl in the center, the one receiving an enthusiastic head hug, is wearing a hijab, headscarf. Sweet though it might be, the subject of the photo hardly seems to merit its prominence in one of Canada's national newspapers. Yet this photo, featuring Asmahan Mansour, known as Azzy to her friends, is just one of dozens that have appeared in both the Canadian and international media. Azzy's story has become the unlikely catalyst for political posturing, diplomatic backhands, and the ravings of talk show regulars. For about 10 minutes, it was just another amateur sports story. Azzy's community soccer team from Ottawa was one of 300 competing in a tournament in Laval, Quebec. The girls were just warming up for their third match when the referee gave Azzy a choice. She could remove her hijab or she could sit on the bench. Azzy's coach argued that no other official had expressed any concern over her hijab, but the referee was adamant. The rules of the International Football Association Board, soccer's world governing body, forbade a player from wearing anything that might endanger the player or any others on the field. In this referee's opinion, a hijab could be dangerous in some unspecified way and was thus banned. When the girls' coach reported back to his team, they made a swift declaration of solidarity. If Azzy couldn't play wearing her hijab, they wouldn't play either. Three other Ottawa teams agreed and withdrew from the tournament as well, becoming part of the chain of events that would move the story from the soccer pitch to the front pages of newspapers across the country. The story moved from the sports pages to the political realm when Quebec's premier, Jean Charest, sided with the official and likened the incident to a player being asked to tuck in his shirt. His political opponents, in the midst of a hot provincial election campaign, seized on the premier's remarks as an opportunity to exploit tensions over multiculturalism in general and over the growing Muslim presence in particular. Letters to the editor and blogosphere opinions were pointed and often in direct disagreement. One self-proclaimed soccer fan wrote in the Ottawa Citizen, quote, "If this girl truly loves the sport and respects the rules, she should do as instructed or get off the field and show some respect to the game and her teammates. This is not a religious issue, so let's not play the discrimination card every time someone doesn't get her way. She should rise above petty things like wearing a hijab." End quote. Others gossiped that the referee in question was a Muslim and inferred from this rumor that he must not believe that, quote, good, unquote, Muslim women participate in sports. One or two writers offered conditional support for Azzy, pointing out that her hijab could hardly hide the weapons of a suicide bomber, remarks that offended more than a few Muslims and others who took issue with the stereotype. Still other commentators found reason to celebrate the success of multiculturalism policy, pointing to the unanimous support Azzy received from her team and community. The story didn't end there. Was the hijab a religious or a cultural symbol? Did it signify the subjugation of Islamic women And if so, should this be tolerated within a country that enshrines the equality of men and women in its constitution? Quebec had toyed with banning the wearing of the hijab and other, quote, religious symbols, unquote, including crosses, in its public schools, the same policy that sparked violent clashes in France when that country's government attempted to enshrine complete secularism in the public sphere. A 2006 public opinion poll found that support for a ban on, quote, wearing any religious symbol, end quote, such as, quote, a cross, a yarmulke, or an Islamic headscarf, end quote, is higher in Quebec, 51%, than elsewhere in Canada, 25%. Had Azzi's human rights been violated? The Ontario Human Rights Commission, OHRC, certainly thought so, although it had no jurisdiction to deal with an event that had taken place in Quebec. It called the incident tragic, one that strikes at the very heart of religious freedoms. It warned that such incidents of exclusion not only deter young Muslim women from participating in sports, but could deter all Muslims from participating in community life. The OHRC pointed out that both provincial human rights codes and a series of court decisions recognize citizens' rights to religious accommodation. The Canadian Islamic Congress commended OHRC, while joining with Al Jazeera, the Egyptian ambassador to Canada, and editorialists across the country in condemning pretty well anyone who supported the referee's decision. And what does Azzi think about all the fuss? At first, she said, she felt bad because it was her fault that her team withdrew. Many calls from the media later, she no longer expresses guilt, but insists that she just wants to play soccer. But Azzi seems to be alone in wishing that her 15 minutes of fame would pass. The grown-ups are now in charge of the issue, led by lawyers and interest groups eager to seize control of how the issues will be framed. Critics have been quick to link Azzi's treatment with another Quebec story that made international headlines. The elected council of the small town of Hérouville adopted a rather bizarre statement to serve as a guideline for immigrants who might settle in the community. It purported to inform newcomers that residents would be happy to welcome everyone as long as they followed local customs. The statement helpfully pointed out that women were not to be publicly stoned or burned with acid, nor were they to face genital mutilation, and faces were to be uncovered except at Halloween. A delegation of Muslim women from Montreal visited the community to address some apparent misapprehensions on the part of the councillors. But despite a cordial meeting, the town council reaffirmed its position. Are the citizens of Hérouville ignorant, racist, or merely saying out loud what others are thinking, which might also be ignorant and racist? While some read deep-seated bigotry into these events, they may be more fairly understood as the predictable consequences of different approaches to managing the tensions between personal freedoms and collective identity. Unlike the United States, Canada has not constitutionally enshrined the separation of church and state, and this has resulted in certain inherited inconsistencies. The two founding traditions, English and French, embraced entirely different perspectives. After all, the British monarch is not only the political head of state, but also head of the Church of England. Across the English Channel, the French built institutional liberalism on a foundation of their revolutionary heritage, and it is a liberalism that relegates religion to the private realm in an attempt to ensure that the interests of the common good are not sacrificed in the name of private freedoms. Canadian jurisprudence, along with public opinion, illustrates the often uneasy and sometimes utterly inconsistent positions that come about from attempts to reconcile these two quite different approaches to balancing private and public interests where culture and religion are concerned. As Canada becomes more socially and economically dependent on immigration, the need to reconcile contrasting ideas on managing diversity is becoming more urgent. Unfortunately, it seems that schools not only have been assigned the lion's share of responsibility for managing diversity, but have been instructed to do so without voicing any reservations about the task. Nor have they been involved in developing a robust vision of what would constitute success. With few exceptions, education policy and polemics promote learning tolerance, from which it is reasonable to infer that intolerance is being cast as the root problem. It's a convenient analysis that relegates change to the individual level. If it's all about attitudes, then nothing more fundamental, such as institutional accommodation or existing power structures, need be examined. In glancing through the kinds of diversity materials sanctioned for use by teachers across the country, I was struck by how generic they are, how indifferent to the communities and circumstances that make rural Manitoba schools vastly different from those in urban Montreal. How can embracing diversity succeed if situated diversity is itself denied? Can teaching students that it's great that everyone is different prepare them for a world that has extended or withheld privilege based on group membership, not individual attributes? According to anti-racist educator Jasmine Zien, this amounts to a distortion of the roots of prejudice, how it is practiced, its political purposes, and how it should be addressed in schools. Quote, multicultural festivals featuring saris and samosas do not build critical knowledge of racialized power and privilege in society, which is a necessary base for understanding and combating any form of oppression. Liberal multicultural approaches to diversity can therefore mask inequality under the guise of superficial cultural pluralism. More critical approaches to inclusive schooling instead advocate for a multicentric approach, where marginalized knowledges, histories, and experiences are not simply an add-on to an otherwise Eurocentric curriculum, but rather are part of a plural center where multiple ways of knowing and making sense of the world are the basis for teaching and learning. End quote. Such an approach challenges the dominant culture's right to being the gatekeeper, rule maker, and determiner of what will or won't be tolerated or embraced. It requires the dominant culture to relinquish power and to adjust its views of itself, not just its views of others. Many commentators have likened Azzi's story to the popular movie Bend It Like Beckham, in which a young Hindu girl is pressured by her family and community to abandon her soccer in favor of more modest family traditions. While that movie provided many feel-good moments, it too succumbed to the nostrum that in the end, non-dominant cultures will be better off if they encourage their children to blend into the values and practices of the majority. Applied to Azzi, blending in means not just removing her hijab, but uncovering her navel and gyrating to the pussycat dolls along with the other 11-year-olds. Sadly, I feel a made-for-television movie coming on.